This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 200 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is sponsored by CanvasPeople.com.
Now, CanvasPeople.com has a very easy-to-use photo-to-canvas service that takes your favorite photo memories and turns them into beautiful artwork for you to enjoy every day.
Instead of snapping that beautiful photo and letting it rot in your cell phone, you can bring that photo to life to put on your walls at home, in your office, or to give as a great gift.
Now, what Summer and I have done, because we're so original like this... or I should say I'm original, is that Summer and I have gotten one of our favorite shots ever and had it blown up into a photo to canvas shot. And that is the beautiful photo that Summer took in Scotland 2015, May, of the, oh my gosh, Kilmartin Glen, the carpet of bluebells, and literally Kilmartin Glen is like the perfect name for it too. It's so gorgeous. It looks fake. It looks like someone like Photoshopped it. It's so pretty. And we both had to get the same one because I am not that original, and I loved it anyway. Have you hung yours yet?
No, I haven't.
But I finally put it in the bedroom across from wall opposite the bed. It's just really pretty. And it just, anyway, that's, I have done it finally. And it's just something that I love seeing every morning when I wake up.
Now, I'm sure everyone out there has that phone, that picture in their phone that they mm-hmm. love, and they will never delete it. It's just they keep it just so they can look at it from time to time, that they don't know what else they can do with it. And here's a great opportunity to make something artistic out of it so that it's not just in your phone and it can be some art on your wall or in your office.
Exactly. Take this opportunity. So normally 11 by 14 canvases are priced at $69.99, but canvaspeople.com has a limited time offer. Get one free 11 by 14 canvas and just pay shipping.
I'm sure you guys have some great family pictures for Mother's Day with your kids or with your parents. Well, how about doing something with those pictures?
You know, a lot of stuff comes up, and it's summer holidays, you got birthdays, you got slumber parties. I mean, anything and everything. Graduations. Oh my gosh. Hello. You know how many friends and daughters and sons of friends of mine have graduated just in the past like week or two? It's crazy town. It's graduation season. So take this opportunity, get a free 11 by 14 photo to canvas with promo code Outlander.
That's canvaspeople.com, and use the promo code Outlander.
So before we get to the read along, Summer, I know you're ready to start that, and we're happy to play our music soon. Just want to mention this little thing we're doing next year called Pod Abroad. I don't know. Are you excited, Summer? I think I'm kind of excited about it.
I'm over it.
Oh, then you want someone to take your place?
No!
I think we'd have a lot of people who would take your place. Stop. I know. You don't want to share a room with anyone else. I know how it goes. Basically...
I don't want to share a room at all.
Oh, well, except that...
But I will.
It's your Schwester, so you will. So we're so excited. We talked about it before, and we're going to keep talking about it. We are so happy, so thrilled, so amazed that everything's come together for our first ever Pod Abroad, official Pod Abroad. That's not just us, but it's also you, other Outlander fans, other listeners of our show, watchers of the show, readers of the books. It's a chance to go to Scotland, whether you've been before or never before, and to go with a unique perspective. There are a lot of Outlander trips already in existence, but this is a chance to go see something that's uniquely Outlander, a unique experience, I think. And because we're going to be there and we're going to have so much fun, you never know what we're going to do for show on the road. You never know. And we're so excited. We got some pictures today of, not behind the scenes, but our tour operator recently visited the Royal Yacht Britannia, and she sent us some pictures, and y'all, the velvet ropes, everything that keeps you out of certain places, she said, are going to be removed. We will have access. We can actually go to sit in the chair where the Queen sat. We will have access to a lot of stuff that normally people don't get to see or touch or do. And that's the leaving dinner for the luxury. That's tour two. You can find out more about both of the trips. There's two tours in May of 2018 by going to podabroad.com. Summer, what are you most excited about?
I don't know. I'm just most looking forward to being back in Scotland and, you know, experiencing the people, the culture, and going to some new places I haven't been before.
Yes, me too. There are a number of places that I haven't been either. And I've seen a few things even before the show came out. I lived there for a bit, but you know, I had been to Culloden, I had been to Clavicairns, you know, kind of stuff that you do as an Outlander fan, as a book fan. But once the show comes along, there's actual filming sites and, you know, it's so exciting and it's always hard to leave. It's amazing to get there and then it's always hard for me to leave every time. And Summer can
She'll cry.
I will. I cry both times. I cry when I land. I cry when I leave. I cry when I drink and I'm thinking about leaving. Every time.
She just cries.
I just cry. I'm a big ball of cry. But I'm fun to be around. I promise you. At least until dark. I'm just kidding. Okay, so.
Where can they go, Ginger, to find out more information about the tours?
Podabroad.com. And you'll see a cute little welcome video or intro video, which we announced on Beltane. So go to podabroad.com and find out more about the trips. So there's still places, but it's going fast.
And now on to our read-along. This week, we're beginning part 9, entitled Worlds Unknown, and we'll be beginning with chapter 53, entitled Bat Guano.
Eileen P. writes, the chapter title, Bat Guano, makes me think of batshit as in crazy.
As
maybe
should.
I'm, that's true. I never thought about it that way, actually. Maybe I'm just being influenced by crazy Father Fogden in the previous chapter, or maybe this chapter is gonna be insane. But wait, it's about bat guano as fertilizer. For Mr. Gray's plantation on Jamaica, are we going to have the long-awaited Jamie and Lord John Gray reunion? We'll have to wait and see.
Do you think they'll kiss?
Summer.
And hug each other.
Lisa T. writes, from the beginning, herself is engaging our sense of smell. Engaging is a very interesting way to put it, Lisa T. More like assaulting.
Harassing.
Assault.
A pepper.
You don't make me snort. You're a dork. Jamie and Claire are back together. Fergus and Marsali are married. They're taking along 10 tons of bat guano in the ship. And as soon as I read that, as soon as I said it out loud, I got that song in my head. Guantanamero.
That's not what I got.
How does it go?
I don't know how the real song goes. I just remember the SNL version.
Me too.
With one ton of fan mail.
But that's right. That's how it starts. One ton of fan mail. That's what I get. A one ton of fan mail. One ton of fan mail. I get a one ton of fan mail. And then what does the other guy say? How does he one up him?
2 ton of fan mail.
Like keep going.
I'm not doing that.
Because there's a line at the end that you have to get.
I'm not going to do that. And the reason I'm not going to do that is because that's not the actual original song. There is an actual song, but I don't remember the lyrics to it.
Because that's pretty much what I remember too was the SNL skit. So the funny part of the SNL skit is he keeps one-upping him. And then at one point, it's Patrick Swayze and somebody else. And at one point, he's like, whatever. He's like, he has a plastic penis. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. So I was like, oh my gosh, he went there. Yes. Is that what you're trying not to sing?
He said he stuffs his trousers is the verse that leads to with the plastic penis.
Oh, see, I forgot that part. Did you just Google it?
No.
You knew this? Oh my gosh.
I didn't want to have this conversation.
You almost made me spit out my Diet Pepsi. Oh, God. They're taking along 10 tons of bat guano in the ship. As they brought it onto the boat, of course, that's making it a very pretty statement. As the slaves brought it onto the boat, it made, Diana writes that it made the air look like golden, like speckles of gold. Is bat guano like sparkly? I tried to look it up and I'll link to the Wikipedia article about bat guano, but I couldn't see anything or any documentation, at least in that article, and I did not look past that, about it being sparkly or golden. Erica B. writes, "Aren't you glad you're not one of the slaves hauling the guano? So glad that's something I will never have to deal with." Bat guano.
Okay. This is on a Wired.com Wired.com article. It says, "Bat scat is described as sparkling with insect exoskeletons."
Ooh.
"Bats have sparkly poop" is the headline.
Okay. So you have to email that to me so I can put it into the show notes.
I will. And it says...
Or text. I don't care.
This article's funny. there's just lots of puns. So I guess they have a diet high in beetles with exoskeletons. You know how they have those shiny...
Mm-hmm.
Shiny
That's
wings.
Funny.
So their poop is full of those. So it's just the light reflecting off of all of those. But I'll send you this link.
Fun times. See, we get educational here at the Outlander podcast.
This is what everyone always wanted to know.
Lisa T. writes, "So not only is there a terrible smell, but the men's bodies are covered in it. The guano. Like living corpses. Claire tells us that it was Fergus's idea to haul the guano, and it will be several days before they reach port. Claire is less than thrilled with him. So once they drop off the stuff they have to, they are going to do some of the business dealings for Jared. Fergus looked around, and bat guano it is. Shipping it from Bridgetown to Jamaica to use as fertilizer on the sugar plantation of one Mr. Gray planter."
This is another Grange.
That's what I wrote, Grange girl. Read my brain. Erica B. writes, "What do you think the odds are that Mr. Gray of Jamaica is Lord John Gray? I mean, the actual odds, I wonder how many people live on the island in this time. Also, why hasn't anyone connected the dots yet?" We have Eric B. It's called Grange. I don't know if you guys have realized by now that Summer making that noise is kind of what I go for.
That's what you're aiming for?
No, but short of like having you cackle, and I don't go out of my way necessarily to make you laugh, but if we're talking about something that's funny, then I might like add to it and then it makes you cackle. But I love it when you laugh because I'm easy to make laugh, I think, a little bit too much. But I think
really
you're...
Because last week I was hella funny and you went, "That's funny."
Probably I had no voice. I don't think I was feeling much last week very well. So Marsali is sitting by, watching Fergus work, a shawl over her face. It's about 3 to 4 days' journey by boat. Fergus is taking charge. Nice. Jamie said that since he has a wife, he has to think about taking on more work. And he's a partner, so there you go. Now Claire has a wonderful line. Quote, "I really would like to read the letter Marsali is sending to her mother. First Fergus, I mean, then Father Fogden and Mamacita, and now a dowry of 10 tons of batshit." Unquote. Love it. Joe B. writes, "Fergus is stepping up now. He has a wife to support. His olfactory insulting cargo due to be delivered to a Mr. Gray. An interesting choice of name given that Mr. Gray planter doesn't figure further in this story. And I don't know how, if any connection to Lord John Grey's family. Although I haven't read all the Lord John books, it seems there are really 50 shades of Greys."
No, there's just one Grey, and he's just everywhere.
Dude. Jamie had visited a Masonic lodge to ask about young Ian and the Bruja. The master of the lodge had promised to spread the word among the peeps. Now a man was coming to talk to Jamie. So Stan, Fergus, and Marsali and Claire had gone to a slave market the day before while Jamie was visiting the lodge. Murphy had forced Fergus to buy parasols for Marsali and Claire. Quote, "All the white women in Bridgetown carry parasols." Unquote. Claire really did put up a fuss about the parasol, but she was grateful for it once they hit the slave market. Diana describes the sight and the smell. And we don't need to go into too much. There, we'll have enough description. We'll have I'll have quotes of different things later on in this chapter and others, but I mean, my gosh, this is the first time we, through Claire, are hit with the reality of slavery, because up until this point, you know, it existed in Outlander. It existed, it just wasn't on that continent, or as we'll find out,
it just wasn't part of this story.
So slavery in the colony, slavery in the islands was a reality, but this is the first time as readers that it's now part of our story in front of our eyeballs via Claire. And it, you know, I'm not going to, I don't think it ever gets easier. Do you agree, Sam? From this moment that we're introduced to the institution in the books or through the books, through Moby, anytime we run into it, it never gets easier. I mean, some certain circumstances obviously are easier to read about, not because it's great to have slavery, but because no one's being like mistreated in the same way that's happening here or in certain other ways. But the fact that they exist is just like, was this hard for you to read?
I mean, it wasn't light reading by any stretch of the words. I think she wrote it honestly, and it was very heavy with the reality of that, of the time period.
And I thought, I'm not there yet, but I thought it was interesting that she, and I think rightly so, gave Claire not really a breakdown, but like a Claire snaps. And I think she had to, number one, because it was real. It was truly how she felt coming from the 20th century. However, she had to go through that. So she understood what the ramifications were for doing that. Because if she continued to behave that way in other situations in that time, in the colonies, with slaves, she can get people killed. She can get people and herself hurt and her husband, you know, and family in danger. But she can get the slaves in trouble. And that's putting them in a worse situation than they're already in an awful, awful situation. So in a way, it's awful to say this, but it's a learning. It's a learning moment for Claire. I think she had to go through it just like she had to go through. Talk about Jamie's methods of getting things right with her or his men. But it's just like when she didn't listen to him, right? When he was going out to see Horrocks in Outlander, and she went for a walk. In the book, she almost drowned. She was saved by a redcoat. They took her back to what's his name? And that's how she ended up with BJR. And then he had to come to her rescue. Well, if she had stayed put, it wouldn't have happened. If she had kept her mouth shut or stayed with her people, this wouldn't happen. But she, in both situations, they were both important contextual and cultural learning situations. Though they had not so fun outcomes, she learned from both of those and she never repeated. Doesn't mean it wouldn't happen in another situation. But she never again put Jamie in that situation, right? That she had in book one. And I don't believe she ever put another slave in this situation. But basically, her going through this taught her a lesson. And that's very hard to say and very ugly to say. It's awful what happened, both sides. But, you know, it's not her time. I mean, it is her time now, but she's not from there, from then. So, what did you think about her trying to
intercede? I think it's just those times when I just shake my head at her. It's because she knows there's nothing she can do. She knows it's not going to make a difference. And all it's going to do is cause trouble for her and everyone else around her. But she literally can't help herself.
Seriously.
And which makes it very difficult to read. And there's a lot of, for me, eye rolling involved when she does these things. And it's not that her intentions are bad. And it's not that it's not the right thing to do, but I just feel like if you are a visitor in a time period, it's like I feel like you should try to play by the rules a little bit just for the sake of the people around you. But at the same time, she's kind of like a superhero doing it anyway, even though she doesn't have any superhero powers. You know, she always wants to do the right thing, even to her own detriment. So I can respect that. But it still is very difficult to read sometimes.
Yeah, because you see that she knows that she can't change it. But she also knows that she can't live with herself unless she speaks up. That was the problem. And she learns through this that, and this is going to sound maybe kind of odd, but what did her speaking up do? It allayed her conscience, right? It made her conscience feel better, at least about keeping it in and walking away and closing a blind eye. That it did, but it didn't help her in the long run because now she owns a slave. It didn't help the slave. I mean, thank goodness Jamie, you know, bought him. Obviously, this is still an awful thing to say, which was better for him because he will be treated better by them than, you know, potentially whoever else was going to buy him. And it stopped his harassment, his molestation, whatever, by the auctioneer asshole. But in the end, what was that feeling? it came from a very good place, but I would argue that that was a very selfish thing to do. She wasn't doing it to, yeah.
Most of the things she do. Most of the things she do. Most of the things she does are very reactionary. They are not, and reactionary things generally can be very selfish because it's your sense of self-preservation on different levels. That's the first, you know, your first gut instinct a lot of times. But her self-preservation isn't for the preservation of her own safety. It's for, you know,
it's for her conscience.
Right.
In this situation, she only did it. Did she truly feel bad for the guy? Of course. Her heart and conscience, her heart was in the right place. But if she had thought a little, like one or two steps ahead, and this happens over and over with Claire, if she had thought one or two steps ahead, and she has even less of an excuse. Yes, it's her first time coming across slavery, but she has been in situations that are potentially dangerous, and she knows this is potentially dangerous. She's not stupid. She's been in this situation, similar situations, similarly potentially dangerous situations before, starting in Outlander. She's not stupid. She knows where things are dangerous, and she knows when to let Jamie, you know, take care of things. Not because she's not her own person, but because it's the time and the place. But I would argue that her speaking up, her heart was in the right place, no matter what. And yes, in the end, it benefited the slave because he will have, he has to be owned. He has them, and they're much better masters, which I hate to say, than whoever else it would have been. But the only reason she spoke up, because she knew she wouldn't, was not, because she wasn't even thinking about buying it. That was not on her brain. She knew that she could not change his situation. She only hoped to maybe stop the molestation right there, perhaps. But the only reason she did it was because of her conscience. Her heart was in the right place. She wasn't thinking. And thus, I think it was selfish of her. Not mean, but selfish. She was only trying. She could not live with herself unless she spoke up. It's hard for me to even say that. But if she had thought it through, she would have realized, oh, you know what? I'm not going to be able to help anything. Matter of fact, I may make things worse, which she, you know, ultimately did. And Jamie had to come in and buy him to placate everything. So gracious. I went on for a long time about that. But that was a difficult scene to read about what the auctioneer did. Oh, that whole thing was, and the stink and the look and everything. It was awful. That was just awful. Erica B. writes, I find it amusing that Murphy is so insistent that Claire protect herself so her face doesn't get red. I know his concern is partly a status concern, but the amount of insistence is interesting. I kind of found that way too. I thought that too. Stan leads them to the quote white end to see what whites may have been sold recently. And this, of course, is to see if young Ian had been there. The description of the branding is incomprehensible. Claire sees a young woman branded on her breast. Claire is so shocked by the sight that she has stopped and lost her company. She like stopped. She was stricken. And by the time she looks up, her company's gone. Lisa T. writes, this scene, while horrifying in and of itself, has echoes to Outlander when BJR branded Jamie. I found this very interesting. Claire is a doctor. She has just watched a girl get branded, burned, and yet she runs from it. Usually, Claire's the first one to offer help when someone is hurt. The fact that she hurries away despite the screaming and whimpering of the girl is significant. Perhaps she is overwhelmed, horrified, or even frightened. I wrote, oh my gosh, the one-armed slave whom the auctioneer begins to handle? Dude. As Claire's watching, she can't take anymore. And this is what I was talking about her outburst. Claire attacks the auctioneer. In return, he slaps the slave's face. Fergus sees her finally, and her group comes to her aid. Murphy, he's like rolling his eyes like, oh my God. Murphy takes off his wooden leg and smashes it over the auctioneer's head. Claire has been tripped and she sits on the stone during this entire event. She realizes what she's done. So see, she realizes this is all her fault. Jamie is suddenly there. She tells him she's freaking out and she's like, I can't stand this. Do something. please do something. And so he did. He bought the one-armed slave. Quote, and as the ironic result of my little outburst of sensibilities, I was now the appalled owner of a genuine male Guinea slave, one-armed, but in glowing health, and of guaranteed virility. Unquote.
Awkward.
So awkward. His name, according to his papers, was... it's French, but
Isn't it temporary?
Well, you don't pronounce the last. If it's French, it's temeraire. Yeah. Because there's no accents in it. So, temeraire. Okay. Martina P. writes, the detailed description of the slave market in Barbados is a wee bit disturbing. It takes me back to my own memory when I accidentally ended up in a meat market in Mombasa, Kenya. In over 40 degree heat, I was gagging the whole time. Reading this chapter made me think of that ghastly smell again. Now, 40 degrees centigrade Celsius is like 110.
Yeah, that took me a second. 100. I was like, 40 degrees? That's not hot. And then I was like, maybe she means Celsius, and then, which would be very, very hot.
Maybe not 110, maybe more like 105, but still stifling. Sure. Okay. Lisa T. writes, again, herself engages our sense of smell. The stinking was, quote, staggering, even to Claire, who was accustomed to the scent of disease. At the beginning of this chapter, the men's skin was merely covered in the scent of decay. Their skin is literally baking in it. The conditions are repulsive and inhuman.
It's 104 degrees.
Okay, so I was close, 104. I mean, I said 105, but yeah. Erica B. writes, between the branding of slaves, which I'm sure didn't add to the pleasant smells in the vicinity, to the auctioneer massaging the penis of the one-armed slave, I am not surprised that Claire snapped at the horridness of it all. What a terrible place to be. What an awful shame that Jamie wasn't able to get any useful information about Ian specifically. They did get a name, though, perhaps the destination to visit and inquire. Joe B. writes, Claire horrifically owns a legitimate slave, and this paperwork will become important. In her usual well-meaning and entirely defensible outrage at coming face-to-face with the realities of slavery, she acts without thinking, and as ever, Jamie is there to save the day. There was no news of young Ian. They did learn that someone bought slaves from the captain of the Bruja 3 days prior, so the Bruja had been somewhere in between Hispaniola and Bridgetown. The slaves had been sold from the Bruja. One had an unknown previous owner, but two had belonged to a Mrs. Abernathy of Rose Hall, Jamaica. As they sail, a greater stench fills the air. It's the burning ground, where bodies of slaves who didn't survive passage from Africa are burned. They have to look. They have to see if young Ian was part of that. Jamie jumps on top of the burning pyre, oh my goodness, moving bodies around, looking throughout. When he's done, they leave and he vomits. And he tells her several times, don't touch me. He dives into the water, fully clothed, to rinse off and get rid of whatever he can. Young Ian wasn't there. And Diana ends this terrible chapter with these poignant lines. Quote, the breeze was freshening. It stirred the tendrils of wet hair that lay across his shoulders. I looked back to see that the plume of smoke rising from the little valley had changed to black. It flattened and began to drift out over the sea, the ashes of the dead slaves fleeing on the wind back toward Africa. Unquote. Martina P. writes, poor Jamie. It was even too much for him to bear to search for Ian among the burning bodies of slaves who died on the ships. Diana certainly does never shy away from making the reader feel uncomfortable, and I am convinced she is not exaggerating in any way, shape, or form. However, I really won't be terribly disappointed if this chapter doesn't make it to the screen. me either. I think they don't need it. I think the viewer will understand and get the point. They're looking for Ian. They don't necessarily need to do that. I think they need the slave market scene. I don't think they necessarily need the pyres, but I mean, it could drive it home, not necessarily the search for Ian, but just drive home, you know, making not a political point, because I mean, I think most people agree slavery is not good, but definitely a cultural point. And, you know, drawing that line in the sand of we are beyond this. We should be beyond this. What do you think? Do you think they'll keep that?
The slave market?
No, not the market, the burning pyre where Jamie searches.
I mean, It's not necessary. It's a very moving like reminder of just how awful the slave trade was and is in some parts of the world. It's just, you know, the nature of slavery changes from generation to generation, but it's a, I don't know if they'd cut it for time. Knowing the importance of the slavery tie-in as it comes to the rest of this book, they can't leave the slavery completely out.
I wouldn't suggest that they would do that.
I'm just saying, but I don't know how much of it they have time to leave.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually a good point too. I wasn't thinking of time. I was thinking of, do they need it? I mean, you can make people sick and sad and, you know, totally drive it home and reflect on it. That, I mean, I think there's a, you can make the artistic choice either way, but you can choose, you can get, if you have, I don't even know if they're going to do the thing where the auctioneer diddles the dude. I mean, that they probably won't do that part, but I think they need to keep the market period to just not only set the scene, even though we know it's slavery is around, but they have to, that's needed to get Téméraire to what leads to other things. But I think, yeah, I don't think they need, the pyre. I think it would be for a dramatic effect or to drive it home. And again, like you said, it's a matter of, it could be a huge matter of time. Eileen P. writes, I never knew that they burned the bodies of the slaves that didn't survive the ocean crossing. Why weren't the bodies buried at sea? I'm disgusted that the bodies would be saved to be burned and used as fertilizer.
Well, let's be honest. They're probably not checking on them very often in cargo, which means they're probably not discovering that they're dead until they arrive at the new destination. Mm-hmm. So I think a burial at sea is probably not a realistic option.
It requires more work. Yeah.
Correct.
Eileen continues, to have Jamie look through a pile of burning bodies for Ian is like having Jamie experience hell. Notably, he does so without hesitation. Jamie will go to hell and back to find young Ian. Joe B. writes, the slave burial ground and the branding station remind me of the accounts of the Holocaust and of how, when life of the other is considered so cheap by those in positions of authority, the others are reduced to basic survival instincts and are able to undertake roles and duties that they wouldn't consider themselves ever doing. The moment of grace is provided after these horrible and confronting images and experiences in the description of the smoke, the soul, now free, can return home. Lisa T. writes, in a third and final assault on the olfactory sense, they go by the burning grounds. Jamie's love and fear for Ian led him to walk into a burning, smoking hell. This chapter is very grim and repugnant in many ways, but finally the breeze is beginning to freshen. Their fears for young Ian, for the moment, are alleviated, and the ashes of the dead are returning home. Joe B. writes, I love the contrasts in Voyager. We've seen the differences between legend and reality in the story of the Dunbonnet, the contrasts and comparisons between Frank and Jamie, old love and new love, and now after what is described as, quote, a beautiful setting for their nuptials and declarations of love, we move very quickly to a picturesque discussion of bat droppings. It is trademark Diana humor and a very clear delineation of this new section.
And that was chapter 53.
So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.